We're going to continue our special report on the assassination of John F. Kennedy. This hour, our special guest will be Cassie Parnew, who worked the Kilgallen Files. Dorothy Kilgallen was an American journalist and television game show panelist. She starred in What's My Line? She was syndicated to more than 146 papers and, of course, appeared on the What's My Line television show. She ventured into topics outside of just show business, politics, organized crime, and she wrote stories about the John F. Kennedy assassination, becoming the only reporter to interview Jack Ruby, Lee Harvey Oswald's killer. She did that out of earshot of sheriff's deputies. What did she hear? And she died at a young age of 52 under very suspicious circumstances. Up next, we'll talk with Cassie Parnew about this on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Cassie Parnew is an investigator, historian, interest in the Warren Commission's work, and also Dorothy Kilgallen's suspicious death, which began nearly a decade ago for her research. Digging into the Kilgallen's FBI and CIA files, Cassie uncovered some astonishing inconsistencies, found more questions than answers, and here she is on Coast to Coast. Hi, Cassie. How are you?
Hi, George. I'm great. How are you doing?
Good. I'm looking forward to this. I remember as a kid watching What's My Line. You know, it started in 1950, but it lasted until 1967. It was a long-running CBS show. But I remember Dorothy Kilgallen. And you know, I kind of got a kick out of watching the show, seeing who these special guests would be. I didn't realize at that young age, though, Cassie, that she had really started to investigate the JFK assassination. She was almost obsessed with it, wasn't she?
I would say borderline, yes. I would think that based on what I've researched and what I've found, it seems to have taken up a great deal of her life around that time.
Tell me how you got interested in her work in the Kilgallen Files.
Like you, I watched her on reruns, though, of What's My Line, and I really thought she was...
Are you saying I'm older than you?
Maybe a little. I thought she was pretty interesting. She seemed a little uppity, maybe, but I wanted to learn more about her. So I bought the biography that was written about her, and I read it, and I found it very interesting. And then at the very end, there was kind of a note about how her son dug into the FBI files and started requesting them. I realized that that book was written in the 70s and that perhaps more had come out, you know, been released from the FBI. So I decided to go ahead and request a file of my own. And that just completely snowballed into this gigantic investigation on my part, looking into the CIA files of hers and autopsy reports and trying to figure out what happened to her, really.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit about some of her work. She did interview Jack Ruby, but she never told anybody, did she, what he said?
Correct. She basically kept everything under lock and key. All of her files were very secret, and I believe that she might have been holding on to her information from her Ruby interview for the last chapter of the book that she was writing.
Tell me more.
She was writing Murder One, which was basically a collective of all the major cases that she had covered over her lifetime and career, and she went to cover the Ruby trial. So I believe that she was going to take that last chapter of the book and devote it to Ruby. Ruby respected her very much and basically was okay with having a private interview with her. But anything what was that?
I wonder what he told her.
So do I. I think a lot of people do. Whatever happened in that roughly 8-minute interview that was private, nobody knows. And she sort of came out of it really wondering who he was. And that much is public, that she was a little curious about him as a person. But whatever he told her, it might have been gibberish. It might have been something really huge. All of that went missing when she passed away.
Well, you know, and she may have said, Jack, I've got to know. I won't tell anybody. I'm a journalist. I protect my sources, but I need to know. And maybe he did. Maybe he said, all right, this is what happened. I knew Oswald. I was told to kill him, or who knows what.
Right. There's a lot of speculation as to what he could have said. I know, too, that basically how she got into the interview is she specially requested it, but she also said that they had a mutual friend somewhere out of San Francisco, and that was one of the key factors into her getting that interview, saying that she had a message to relay.
Let's talk about her death, Cassie. What do we know?
We know a lot, but in a sense, very little, if that makes any sense. We know that she died of alcohol and drug intoxication. Basically, she drank too much and took too many pills. We know that she was found in a place that she didn't usually sleep in her home, and that basically the scene was very set up. And we also know that, based on her autopsy reports, on the toxicological reports, that she ingested roughly 15 pills, which is, for most people, I would say, very little for suicide, and just above the point of accidental death. It takes just about 15 pills to kill somebody. So it seems very suspicious that it's just enough to kill her, but it's too little for if she were to kill herself.
Tell me about her husband. What do we know about him?
We know that toward the end of her life, he was battling some substance abuse issues. Like her, basically, they had a lot of pills in their house, and he drank a whole lot. His career was pretty much, I want to say, down the toilet. So he wasn't very prominent in her life or her research, and he sort of kind of took the back seat in regards to her. When she passed away, he is quoted as saying that, you know, he took the files and they'll never see the light of day, and that what was in them will go with him to his grave, which eventually they did in 1971. But we don't really know if he knew anything either.
Well, you know, I saw a clip from What's My Line, Cassie. When Kilgallen came out, she was very thin. This was before she died.
Right.
She was very thin, totally, it seemed to me, inebriated.
Yes.
Slurring her words. I don't know if you've ever seen that clip or not.
Yeah.
And I mean, just stumbling around. And, you know, the other hosts on the show were looking at each other like they didn't know what to say.
Yeah. Sadly, there's a couple of those out there. And it was well known to Goodson and Todman, who were the producers and creators of the show, that she was having some issues with substance abuse. She went to detox several times in the last couple of years of her life, and she, you know, had a fall at one point where she fractured her shoulder, and she was put in the hospital for anemia, so she was not healthy. But toward the end, like maybe in the last year, I would say, she sort of began to get healthier. She gained a little more weight. It was looking better for her, but I don't think that those substance abuse issues really went away.
It is ironic that people like Marilyn Monroe, Dorothy Kilgallen, people who wanted information or might have been close to Kennedy, all seem to die.
Right.
What are the odds of that happening?
I would say it's a little bit suspicious. I try to keep the Kilgallen files pretty objective, but personally, it is a little suspicious. Dorothy really took Marilyn's death very hard. And, you know, she posted, that's new terminology, she published in one of her articles that basically the last scene of Marilyn's life, and it, to me, sort of mirrors her own, almost that, you know, she believed that Marilyn overdosed, and that, yes, the Kennedys may have been involved in that, but she believes that Marilyn overdosed, and it was sort of like, let me take one more pill, and maybe things will seem better tomorrow. That really crushed her when Marilyn died.
What did you uncover, Cassie, in your investigation that would startle the world?
One of my favorite things that I uncovered would be this one particular memo that supposedly is a CIA memo. It references Project Moondust, which some of listeners, you know, may be familiar with that. But basically it says in there that Dorothy Kilgallen was wiretapped and that she had information saying that Marilyn Monroe was going to go public with a bunch of Kennedy secrets, especially related to UFOs and that sort of thing. But I went ahead and contacted the CIA requesting this or anything that may have included a tapping of a phone tapping of Dorothy, and they denied everything, and they said that that memo didn't exist and that basically I was completely wrong. I found that really suspicious, actually.
Okay, that is interesting. It is. Let's talk about the FBI and the CIA files. How much did they accumulate on her? What were they looking for?
The FBI was close to 300 pages in what they're giving out right now. And the CIA has roughly 13, which is, I think, a huge, you know, understatement. I think that they're hiding a lot, personally. But basically, it just covers, her FBI file is the biggest one, and it covers all of these columns that she did about Castro and communism. And they really kept a close eye on her in terms of that. But once the assassination happened, there's a lot of articles in there that she had written about the Warren Commission report. And she got a secret, basically a copy of Ruby's testimony, and it was very secret at the time. and she published it. Well, that is, her FBI file is rife with those articles. And Hoover went ahead and actually went through that file and hand-annotated it, which myself and apparently Mark Lane found very, very interesting. Hoover said that he wrote in there that, you know, some of her reportage was wrong. Like, she quoted that the Dallas police said that initially after the assassination they wanted somebody up on where the grassy knoll is or the overpass is. And she published that because those were the transcripts that she received from somebody within the Dallas police force. But Hoover was like, that's absolutely wrong, and he was correcting her times that she reported. I find it very interesting that Hoover was basically all over her file and following her very closely.
Well, you know, she was very accurate in things that she reported on that came true later. I mean, she would report on all kinds of things.
Right.
Even beyond the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you know what? Years later, the government would say, well, yeah, we did this and we did that. She reported on UFOs.
Yes, she did.
And she had incredible theories about that. You know, she was friends with Frank Sinatra, but they split apart basically as friends.
Yes.
And, you know, she, you're right. She is kind of uppity. She, you know, she called folks from the Grand Ole Opry hillbillies and things like that. But she did have an uncanny ability to look at stories and report them. And then they came true later, or information in these stories came out.
Correct. And I think that's partially the reason why she's a little bit forgotten in terms of history in the assassination. Her name doesn't come up often, and I think it's because what she published back then when it first was happening, when she was the only one questioning the Warren Commission, all of that information is pretty much common knowledge now. So I believe that she was maybe the first person out there to publicly say, you know, there's something fishy about the Warren Commission.
And her death certificate said what? Circumstances undetermined?
Correct. And that's not a typical designation for a death certificate. Usually the strings aren't, you know, left untied like that. Basically, the Emmy's office was saying that, yes, she passed away because she took too many pills and she overdosed. But we don't know how that happened. And they don't usually admit that they don't know how that happened.
She reportedly told a few friends after her interview with Jack Ruby that she was about to blow the JFK case sky high.
Yes, she was convinced that she had something that was going to rip open the case. She thought that she had the biggest scoop of the century, which she very well may have at that time.
She might have.
Yes, she might have. But because she did not take the steps to publish that information, and then she died, basically all of her files are completely gone. And nobody knows what she had, or if it really was the biggest scoop.
Where'd the files go?
Some people say that she gave them to her friend, Florence Pritchett Smith, who ended up dying shortly thereafter she did. But
what are the odds of that happening?
Exactly. But as far as I have proof, I don't have proof that she gave her files to Florence. There is also talk of a safety deposit box in Switzerland that she was keeping some of her, you know, prized jewelry when she passed away. And there's talk that perhaps her family may have put those files in that deposit box. But again, there's no proof of it. Therefore, I can't report it with any degree of certainty.
Cassie, are you concerned at all for your own safety? I mean, you're stepping on toes now, too. Or are they all gone? Are most of these people died?
A lot of them have passed away, but there are many of toes to step on. And I believe I have stepped on several. I was actually stalked for quite some time because of the information that I was gathering. People, A, either really want to hear the information that I have, or B, don't want me investigating it. So I decided to go ahead and just lay it all out there with the files so that perhaps the stalking will go away, and two, so that people can completely learn what I have learned and not have to go through those same avenues, if you know what I mean.
Well, absolutely. Tell me about her personal relationships with the singer Johnny Ray. What's the significance of that?
They were very much in love, and they were sort of kept under the radar for some time, but eventually their relationship became kind of public knowledge. He was much younger than her, but they were very close.
And, is this while she was married?
Yes. I believe that. I don't know who drew first blood in that situation, but they were both, her and Richard were married, but not so much, if that makes sense. He had his things, she had her things, and it sort of worked out that way, I guess.
Open marriage.
very much, but I think that she did not want to get divorced from Richard, despite their problems, because she was Catholic and that was frowned upon.
What does your gut tell you about your research and Dorothy Kilgallen?
My gut tells me that while I try to keep it objective on the website, I think there is something extremely fishy with how she passed away. For one, anybody on the biggest scoop of the century, according to them, I don't believe she would have killed herself by any means. Considering the way that she was found, I think that her family covered up what had happened. I think they moved her. And I believe that either it was accidental or that she was silenced, because what she was publishing was completely what the government did not want her to publish, if that makes sense.
Do you think the family was scared?
I don't think they were scared as much as they wanted to protect her name. For instance, if, say she was out with somebody and passed away during a tryst of some sort, that would look really bad on her reputation. So sure. Would suicide, which is why her death was initially reported as a heart attack. I think that her family might not have been scared as much as they were just concerned for her reputation and their reputation as well. With that, trying to keep everything as private as possible, because I'm sure they were experiencing a great loss.
Well, it's bizarre. It really is. Do you think we'll ever really get the answers, Cassie?
I think right now, no, because the people that are still alive that are somewhat involved in this either don't want to talk about it or have told all that they know. Sure. And I believe there's more to it. With respecting, you know, our family's wishes to not discuss it, we're kind of, people who are interested are kind of left at a dead end with, well, where do we go from here? I think maybe with time, more of her files may be released once it, quote unquote, doesn't matter anymore. You know, maybe more truth about what the CIA was keeping tabs on her about, or the FBI thought of her, it might come out.
There can't be many people left, though.
There's not. There's some close friends of hers at the time that are still alive. There is one person who was a very close friend of hers at the time she died, Ron Pataki. He is still alive, and I've spoken with him. But he does not know, according to him.
He was a columnist, right?
He was a columnist, yes. He says he doesn't know what happened to her, and that people actually think he was involved in her death. And there is a rumor out there that he was a hired CIA assassin. He has disputed that, but that people do believe that he was hired to seduce and kill her. Yeah.
Interesting. And how old would he be now?
He is, I believe he's maybe in his late 60s, early 70s at this point.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder if he'd ever talk again. What do you think?
Well, he talks about her and just talks about how highly their friendship was regarded in his eyes and how much he cared about her and loved her in a platonic sense. You know, he wrote some of the columns, some of the big Kennedy scoops with her, but he won't ever talk about what she told him.
She must have told some people.
She basically, as far as I have ascertained, she has told people closest to her that she had this big, you know, big scoop, that she was going down to Dallas, that she had a contact in New Orleans that she was going to go meet, that would give her some information. And people believe that contact may have been Jim Garrison. But she did not, at least as far as anyone's willing to admit, tell them what her big secret was.
All right. Well, we're going to come back in a moment, Cassie. We're going to take some phone calls with you as we wrap up our special report on the JFK assassination. Phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe joins us with some incredible stories of high strangeness. Normally, she's on the last Thursday of the month. But it's Thanksgiving, so we're accommodating Linda, so she'll be on our next program. And when we come back with Cassie Parnew, we are going to take phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Our guest this hour, Cassie Parnew, as we talk about her work into Dorothy Kilgallen, who was a syndicated columnist, television guest on a quiz show back in the 1950s and 60s. And we will take your phone calls this half hour as well. Cassie, are you happy with the research you did? Is there anything you would like to do differently?
I'm very pleased with what I have found and collected as far as Dorothy is concerned. I would have liked to have spoken to some of the people that had seen her out. Like, for instance, there was a contestant on What's My Line the last night that she passed away who saw her at the Regency Hotel with an unidentified male the night that she died. I would have liked to have spoken with her, but sadly, as far as I know, she has passed away. And I also would have liked to gone, if I could go back now, I would be a little bit harder with my questioning. I would have, you know, asked for more documents. I would have seen if I could get any more police reports. I would have not really taken what I had as gratefully. I would have been grateful, but I would have asked for more because I had an opportunity to get more, I believe, and I allowed myself to, I suppose, be railroaded into accepting what I received.
Okay, let's go to the phones. Bill in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Get us started here, Bill. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Yep, I guess, do you remember the summer of 63? Before Dallas?
Well, I was 13. I'm not going to remember much. And Cassie, how old were you?
I was not born
minus
yet.
Three or what? Yeah.
Minus a lot.
He was, Jack Kennedy was coming through Pittsburgh area, Washington, PA.
Okay.
And he was, I guess he coming through his limo and went by Route 19, head south, Washington, PA. The only thing about what the date, exact date was.
What's the significance of this?
Well, it's the reason why anyone goes to rescue anyone because some, you know, money is involved. Someone needs fed, food, offspring.
I don't follow you at all. Cassie, do you?
I'm going to sit here quietly because I don't know how this relates to Dorothy. I'm not quite following either.
No. Let's go to Ray in Washington, D.C. Ray, welcome to the show.
Hello, George. I know this has always been the catalyst to when you first got interested in this in these type of shows, George, because
sure
I was 18 years old when that happened that day. And I wanted to ask your guest, Cassie, first of all, does she remember when – oh, no, she doesn't. She wasn't old enough then. But you remember, George, that we were told when it first happened that some weeks later we would all be told 75 years later. So what really happened? Things were going to be locked up of the truth or something. I wanted to ask your guest, Cassie, besides Dorothy Kilgallen, I know a few other people who were getting close to the truth and conveniently they looked like it was a suicide or they conveniently died. There's a whole list of people who were investigating it, and the closer they got, they wound up dead.
Right. I know that as far as Dorothy is concerned, she wasn't really in relation with anybody that I know of that mysteriously passed away, other than Florence Smith, who I believe it was a natural death. She was involved with Thayer Waldo through Mark Lane. She was very close to Mark Lane, and they shared information with each other. She got a lot of information from him, and Mark received information from Thayer, who was actually very afraid to publish some things that Dorothy ended up publishing. That's as far as I know about secret information that she published.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Next up, we go to Roy in Marion, North Carolina. Go ahead, Roy.
Hello, Mrs. Pardew. I'd love to ask you two questions.
Okay.
The simpler one is it true that Dorothy Kilgallen was palling around with Joan Crawford in her last hours or days?
In her last several years, she was close to Joan, yes.
She
basically partied with Joan a few times, I would say.
Oh, I'm pretty sure I'd read that she was driving around with him, and they were drinking excessively, and Joan Crawford was kind of, I don't know what you'd call it, really
control.
Prompting it and maybe slipping or something. That may be really a whole lot of just conjecture. And the other one is, in the broader scope of the JFK assassination, a partner in LBJ's law firm, his name is Barr McClellan, came out with a book in 2003 subtitled How LBJ Killed JFK. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not familiar with the book. I'm roughly familiar with the theory, though, that Johnson had something to do with it, yes.
It's kind of, if you're not familiar with the whole thing, well, it's kind of hard to ask the question. He was Oh.
Jesus. Go ahead, ask it, Roy.
Okay, well, according to McClellan, he's a highly respected man, by the way, father of Scott McClellan.
Yes.
And a number of other things. LBJ was just kind of the king rat in a whole consortium of individuals. I wonder if this sounds, I mean, it went from Big Oil to CIA, FBI. Johnson had his own crimes. He was about to go to jail. There were the John Birchers, just everybody. And what I've read about the assassination, it just seems so many of these great researchers like you concentrate on one, you know, aspect.
Right.
So it's almost like a kind of tunnel vision, like Mark Lane. It's all CIA with him.
Right, and I do agree with that. I think that it would take far too long, and it's nearly impossible to embrace every aspect of the assassination and investigate every theory. And I think it's important that, you know, people like me get sort of tunnel vision on one particular part of it so that all together it all makes sense. But there's no way I think that any one person could master all of it perfectly.
What's amazing, Cassie, how many people wanted to do him in?
Right, right.
I mean, it's just almost shocking now. You know, the older I get and the more we see this, I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yes, it is. And I think that Dorothy was sort of onto the Cuban connection. I think that she might have been one of the first people to sort of recognize that, you know, there were people that wanted to do him in other than supposedly Oswald. And I think that she began touching on that, which is why her whole story became, you know, very convoluted now, because she was into that, and I think the government sort of got a little frightened, I would say, because she was questioning them.
All right, let's go to Michael in Norfolk, Virginia. Hey, Michael, thanks for calling.
Hi, George. Cassie, listen, Mark Lane put the smoking gun in CIA Director Alan Dulles' hand.
Yes.
Now, it doesn't get any stronger than that. Mark Lane is very much alive now.
Yes.
I think what you are doing is what George is doing. You are not connecting the dots. Mark Lane made it clear. 1 month after the assassination, Truman said he could not control the CIA. It's an out-of-control organization. So the big question is this. Who was controlling Alan Dulles? And we know the answer to that question. Jim Mars knows the answer to that question. John Loftus knows the answer to that question.
So then Alan
Dulles was taking orders from the Pope of Rome.
Well, so in that case, it's my personal mission to basically give the information and allow people to discern the facts and come up with their own conclusion as to what happened to Dorothy. So I would take it that you believe the CIA had a hand in possibly a murder in that case. Is that correct?
It would be interesting if the Pope had a role in this. Who knows?
Who knows?
Let's go to Diane in Van Nuys, California. Hi, Diane. Your turn. Diane?
I don't think she's there.
Well, first time people aren't there these days. I don't know where they are. All right, let's go to Daniel in Tucson. Go ahead, Daniel.
Hi, George. Good evening to you and your guests. My question is this. In the A&E series, they interviewed a man who was deaf who said that he stood on the overpass and watched the shooter at the grassy knoll break down a gun and put it in a traffic control box.
Yes.
And another guy supposedly came along and picked it up. I wondered if you had any validation on that, whether this guy was for real or whether it was just a bunch of hooey.
I have heard that as well. I watched that documentary. I don't have any validation on that simply because I do focus on Dorothy, and I don't have what she may have had. So she may have had a validation of that, but I do not because I do not have access to her files.
Were people shocked when she died?
Absolutely. It was completely unexpected, and I believe it devastated a lot of people. As far as the people who didn't like her, they may not have been as devastated, but nobody saw it coming.
She was a believer that Dr. Sam Shepard did not kill his wife.
Correct.
And I th- think eventually, wasn't she vindicated on that?
She was. It ended up being that the judge was biased in the case, and she brought that up, and it caused a retrial in which he was found innocent.
This is what she said in 1954. Flying saucers are regarded as of such vital importance that they will be the subject of a special hush-hush meeting of the world military heads next summer. Then in 1955, she went on to say, British scientists and airmen, after examining the wreckage of one mysterious flying ship, are convinced that these strange aerial objects are not optical illusions or Soviet inventions, but are flying saucers which originate on another planet. Isn't that fascinating?
That is fascinating. I think that she was really at that time on the cutting edge of basically not typical news stories. And she, from what I understand, supposedly had a source overseas that gave her that information about the UFOs. That caused quite a big stir in her FBI file. The government was none too happy that she was reporting on that, and basically tried to make her seem flighty and irresponsible for even writing about such a thing.
Let's go to Jeff in Hutchinson, Kansas. Hey, Jeff, go ahead.
Morning.
Morning.
If I remember right, since I was a little younger than 13 at the time, the What's My Line was carried by, of course, one of the major networks, I think CBS.
CBS had it.
Is there a chance possibly she might have, Dorothy might have given the news bureau some information that somebody's tucked away and we haven't heard from them yet, and for some odd reason they haven't.
She kept it secret, didn't she, Cassie?
She did, and when she eventually wanted to publish this the secret testimony from the Warren Commission, her newspaper kind of looked at her askance and wanted her to prove it. I think even to a degree to defend their reputation, they were skeptical. So I don't think that even if she had come up with anything and delivered any information, they would have necessarily, you know, taken it hook, line, and sinker.
Her column was picked up by 146 major newspapers, and at that time, that was huge, wasn't it?
That was absolutely enormous. She was a household name because of her newspaper column, yes.
Was she wealthy?
Yes, but I don't think that her and Richard necessarily managed their finances properly. When she passed away, they were kind of having problems. They had to lay off some of their staff. Things like the elevator in their lavish townhome weren't working properly. They were having some financial issues at that time. And I think that maybe part of her Kennedy investigation and the book that she was writing perhaps was to supplement some of the income that they were losing because, you know, Richard was not working and they had lost their radio show. So they were in some problems.
Let's go to first-time caller Tom in Omaha, Nebraska. Welcome to the program, Tom. Go ahead.
What I'd like to do is bring up another angle. I haven't heard any of it on any of the shows, and that was that John F. Kennedy and his brother were trying to get rid of the Federal Reserve, because the Federal Reserve was really stealing a lot of money.
I brought that up. Go ahead.
Oh, you mean that the fact that he got killed because he had printed up the $1 and $5 bill, and he's in the process of printing up the $10 and $20 bill backed by silver, not by gold.
Well, we don't know if that's why he got killed, but it's sure a possibility.
Well, I have a file on it, a printed file that had been that was available, and somehow I've been tracking primarily the New World Order, which is a lot to do with Kennedy, too.
Well, I would recommend in your case, just as I would recommend in anyone's case, to do what I did. If you're passionate about something and you're interested and you have information, get a website. You can get a free one and put it out there, and who knows, somebody might learn from what you've uncovered.
Tell us about your file, Tom. What do you have?
Well, I've been really trying to figure out why we've been since the Federal Reserve was created by Woodrow Wilson in 1914. He was told by the international bankers if he wanted to be president, at least the story I had gotten, was that he would have to sign two bills, and they were very important. They'd be signed at the same time. One was the Federal Reserve, and the other was the Internal Revenue Department. That was the only way they were going to actually get the money for actually handling the money. The money goes into the Rothschild organization. They had a Mellon Bank, and I still think they have a Mellon Bank in New York. That's one of the conglomerates of the Rothschild organization. And there's so many people involved in this New World Order. I'm told that the CIA is a part of it. The United Nations, started by David Rockefeller, is also a part of the New World Order. In fact, many of the people that are running for president today in this country, Rick Perry, has gone to the Bilderberger meeting. He was there when Barack Obama was there with Hillary Clinton. I saw them.
What you say is absolutely right, Tom. They are all globalists, all of them.
And I think you're onto something, and I think that it would be very beneficial if you took what you've learned and put it out there, because you never know. I've noticed that with Dorothy's file, at least, everything out there online is twisted somehow into some sort of misinformation, and it's very difficult to find actual proof and facts and documents. And anybody who's interested in any small subject really should take the time to gather the information and put it out there, just to correct the misinformation.
If Dorothy Kilgallen was alive today and you had a chance to talk with her, Kathy, mm-hmm. what would you ask her?
Oh, that is a loaded question, George. I think I would probably ask her, of course, you know, what she had uncovered at the time, and what she thought had happened, because she was very smart about the assassination. She'd done a lot of research, and she had really taken time to look into it. And I think it would be interesting to know, based on her connections, maybe what she had learned about what happened to Kennedy.
She stepped on some toes, didn't she?
She really angered Hoover. Hoover was not her friend. In the beginning, they were all right. She would send him, you know, snippets of information and sort of leads almost. And then when she came out with the assassination coverage, she was uncovering things that the Warren Commission was not ready to release. She was questioning them. She said it was baloney. And that angered a lot of people, including J. Edgar Hoover.
Cassie, get your website out for us, would you please?
Yes, it's kilgallenfiles.wordpress.com. And that there is all of her autopsy reports, her toxicological reports, police reports, everything that I've found in terms of how many times she was discovered dead, which is two, possibly three. So I have all those timelines up there, and it's very a rich resource for anyone interested in looking into what happened to her.
Continues to add to the puzzle, doesn't it? That's been our special report on JFK. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.